Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Optusport Football Podcast. This week I was joined by Michael Bridges and Julian Laron to pay respect to the late Terry Venables. We ask if it's all falling apart for Ange Postecoglou at Spurs, and has Sergio Ramos missed more games suspended than Bridgie played in his whole career? I'm Mark Schwarzer, and we've got all that and more on the Optusport Football Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Optusport Football Podcast. This week, I'm joined by Phil Kitromilidis. No, I'm not. He's for some reason decided that he's going to plan a flight back home from England to Spain. I mean, well, I suppose we're probably doing this podcast for the very first time at this time of the day anyway, but we are joined by former Leeds United striker Michael Bridges and European football expert Julian Laurens. Well, I've got to start. First and foremost, say welcome, guys. Thanks for joining us. Let's not mention Phil anymore. Actually, we will hear from him later on in the podcast, so we're going to have to talk about him. I'm going to start with Garnacho's overhead scissor kick at Goodison. Was it the best overhead scissor kick you've ever seen at a top level, Julian?
Wow, that's a good question, Schwarzer. I mean, my favorite would always be the Cristiano Ronaldo one. If you remember, against Atletico Madrid with Juventus, the hat trick in the Champions League as well. It's just, I guess there's different style in, remember the Gareth Bale one as well in the Champions League final, which could be a favorite for a lot of people. This one is very similar to the Wayne Rooney one in the, obviously in the derby back in 2011, if you remember, against City. So I guess there's all sort of different. Back in when I was a kid at PSG, we had the Amara Simba, the striker, who this used to be his trademark. He sometimes used to chase the ball up on purpose to do the overhead kick himself. So I grew up watching Amara Simba doing some pretty good one, but Garnacho was very, very special.
Bridget? Yeah, I've got to agree with there, Jules. Garnacho is absolutely outstanding. And it was very reminiscent of the Wayne Rooney one at Old Trafford. I think that the technique with Garnacho's is better than the Rooney one because he's got to take two steps away from goal to get himself set. But Jules, I thought you were going to mention every overhead kick in the world that has ever been done there, because I've specifically picked one out and you didn't mention it. And it stands up there for me because I played against this guy for Leeds United in the Champions Leagues against Barcelona in 1999-2000. However, the year after,
yes, I know
2001, against Valencia Barcelona, this guy who absolutely destroyed us called Rivaldo, he scored one of the greatest scissor kicks I've ever seen on the edge of the box. He chested up, like you said. He does the scissor kick against Valencia. That was for his hat-trick. And not only that, I think it was the importance of the game to actually get Barcelona to qualify for the Champions League ahead of Valencia,
that's
who
right.
were playing. It was like the £50 million goal. So for that reason, I'm saying I'm sticking with Rivaldo. But no doubt about it, Garnacho's is definitely up there. It's world-class. But for me, it was definitely Rivaldo.
Bridgie, I spent my night looking for yours, for one of your overhead. I could not find anything. I mean, maybe YouTube didn't exist at the time or something. Or you were not that kind of striker, maybe.
Well, no, Julian, I was that kind of striker. I did actually try it in a game and I ended up being injured for 2 years, mate. So there you go. It's, that was definitely not in my repertoire. I had a different technique to that.
Did you ever pull a miracle one off at training, Bridgie?
You know that, all the lads, I mean, you would have seen them all in training against you, shooting practices. The lads, we used to love doing, obviously, a little bit of crossing for the heads or to touch volleys. And the amount of times we would try scissor kicks like that, I reckon, Swartzy, I would have tried about 500 plus in my career behind closed doors. And I reckon I might have nailed one. So that just shows how impressive this is. And I've seen it. I tell you what, I bet you've seen a few injuries as well when people have tried it, eh?
I have to tell you what, like, yeah, I've seen lots of players try that training. In a team, have I played in a team where someone's actually scored an overhead scissor kick like that? Probably, but I just can't, nothing really stands out. But Julian, you mentioned it. The Gareth Bale one in the Champions League final was insane. Cristiano Ronaldo, Rivaldo. I mean, Rooney.
Yeah.
The thing is, they're all up there, right? For various reasons. I also think Rooney's one was a higher one, as in the way the ball reached him, and he had to reach back further than Garnacho's. Garnacho's is a little bit on the side. Does that make it more difficult? Does that make it better? So I kind of go the scene setter. What was the biggest occasion to score a goal of that magnitude? Gareth Bale one's pretty big, but then you kind of go, at what stage of the game was it? And then Wayne Rooney's in a Manchester derby at Old Trafford. That is like, that is sublime. And then Rivaldo in a Champions League game as well. So I don't know. Look, they're all up there. They're all amazing.
We're going to put this out on socials anyway, no doubt about it. And we're going to say, pick the best. We've got Julian's, we've got mine, we've got yours, we've got Garnacho's, we've got Rooney. Absolute endless amount. And let's see what the public think, eh? And then they can settle the argument.
Yeah, for sure. Should move on now and talk about Terry Venables. Obviously, the late Terry Venables and the sad news of his passing. His former Socceroos. He was aged 80. Former Socceroos manager, sorry. And he was aged 80 years old. After a long illness, which is obviously very, very sad. I had him at Middlesbrough. Well, I had him in the national team initially, and he never picked me. I had one cap, actually. And then it was a time when the international games weren't aligned with club football. And he brought me in for one camp, and I just signed for Middlesbrough, and I had to leave the camp early. And he was all on board with it because Brian Robson was a manager at Middlesbrough. Mike Kelly was my goalkeeping coach, and they both worked with him when he was with England. So they had a really close relationship with him and it was all okay. And then from that point onwards, he basically never picked me again. And what it was the second, like the third or fourth game I played for Middlesbrough, we had the return leg of the cup semi-final. And I got permission, Brian Robson, Mike Kelly spoke to Terry Venables, got permission not to play in the game not to go with the national team to play in this massive game for my club. And then 2 days before, or a day before actually, he rings me, Terry Venables, and says, you need to make a decision. I went, what decision? You know, from my understanding, you've co-located it with Brian Robson and Mike Kelly. Why am I having to make a decision now? He went, no, you just have to make a decision now. And I went, well, I've already committed to playing for Middlesbrough. And he went, right, fine. And that was it. Never picked me again. So yeah, that was that. But then he came to Middlesbrough and I had him for 6 months and I was worried. I was really worried when he turned up. I thought, this is me gone. There's no way. And he was brilliant. He laughed. He laughed with me and smiled. We went, oh, we'll have a chat later on. And that was it. And we kind of went on and he was brilliant. He was a fantastic manager to work with. Great coach. Really, really good coach on the football pitch. Yeah. Obviously a very, very sad loss. Bridger, you've had experiences with him as well, haven't you?
Yeah, very sad loss, Swartz, like you're saying. I think he's a man that's got a lot of wisdom because if he's not picking you, it shows that he's done his homework and his research and he's a very, very good technical, talented coach. I felt really sorry for Terry when he got the Leeds United job. We'd had a huge run with David O'Leary, obviously the Premier League and the Champions League, and it was coming to the end of the run and Leeds were just starting to go into a little bit of financial difficulty behind the scenes that none of the players knew about. But what it was, Terry was the manager of the Australian national team. And we had a pre-season tour. I'll never forget. We went away on pre-season tour to Thailand, China and Australia without a manager. We were meeting the manager over there. And in charge of the club was Eddie Gray and Brian Kidd. And neither of them knew whether they were going to be staying. They hadn't spoken to Terry. And there was no discipline or no organisation. So it was like the pre-season was basically like a stag do or a bachelor party because we were karaokeing every night. The training was very limited and it was a real, real shame that when we got to see Terry over in Australia to become the manager and then come back, I think we were still underdone from that pre-season where it had been so disorganised. And well, like you say, actually meeting the guy, the aura that he had about him, I just found was brilliant. He was a lovely guy to talk to. And I'd been out with a lot of injuries and he just said, listen, I'm going to try and get you back to what I want to see from you. And he used to just do lots of little one-on-ones. You were saying they're technical and the way he would dissect a game, I thought was fantastic. And that, having worked with David O'Leary for so many years and had success, a lot of good upbringing with O'Leary, when I saw Terry and heard what he had, the attention to detail, like you could tell he's managing Barcelona in England and that, it was on a different level. And I'm so gutted that his time frame was very short and that I was coming back from injury because I would have loved to have had a lot more time with Terry Venables. And like you say, I think the news came out, he is absolutely devastated. And it's hit the global news because of the man that he was. There's not many people have gone around the world and coached at the clubs that he has. And he's just, like you say, a fantastic guy on and off the field.
It's a shock, Bridgie. You went on a preseason tour and it was like a stag do, and you were very much at the fore of that. And I bet you were up on the karaoke machine every night as well. I mean, it's look, I'm only guessing, but I think it's a pretty good educated guess. Am I close to it?
There was a few that were following in line, mate. I mean, Robbie Fowler was there, so Robbie loves a little bit of it. He's a wild child as well. Don't get us wrong. Michael Dubry, he's another one that used to get the party going. But yeah, like I say, sports, when you don't know who's at the helm, you know what lads are like. Well, when you see an inch that you can take, you're going to take as much as you can and maximise. And we were taking yards and metres, mate. So yeah, unfortunately, we let ourselves down pre-season for Terry's arrival. I've got to say that.
I mean, you said how great coach he was in England, especially he won the FA Cup with Spurs. He led England in the Euro 1996, losing that semi-final against Germany on penalties, of course, which was, you know, which was penalties in the 90s, which was, I think, a lot of the disturbing block for England team. But like Bridgie was saying, for him to go to Barcelona and be so successful, he won the league in 85 with them. The first season after Maradona left the club, they hadn't won the league for 11 years. So it's not like he would arrived in a Barca team that was already dominant and winning everything in Spain. So it was easy for him. He had to make them win again after such a long period of time for a club like that. 11 years without a league title is incredible. So he did that, and they were really, he charmed them completely. And to go back to what Bridgie was saying about the aura and the charisma, this is him a lot. He would seduce a room. He could work the room so quickly, so easily as well. I met him only once at like an award dinner, and you could see the presence that he had, that kind of charisma. And I'm not surprised that in the 80s, 90s, when he was a coach, that transpired really to the players. And it's a shame he lost the 86 European Cup final with Barcelona on penalties as well against Steaua Bucharest. So the two, maybe the biggest game in his career, really, that final and the semi-final of the Euros with England, to lose them both on penalties, you know, imagine if he had won that, where that would have taken him after that.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Fantastic coach, fantastic guy. Let him rest in peace, of course. Haaland, he has scored 50 goals in the Premier League. He's the fastest player to do it. He did it in 48 games in Manchester City's 1-1 draw with Liverpool. How impressive is that, Bridgie?
Well, I was really surprised. I mean, it's incredibly impressive, but the team that he is playing in are going to create chances at will under Pep Guardiola, Manchester City. And I think over the year, we've seen, you know, Aguero had a massive success with Manchester City, and then they really struggled to find somebody that was going to get on the forefront and get all these goals. You know, Jesus, it never really hit for him. They were trying to get Harry Kane. That didn't materialise. Now they've got Haaland. I mean, he has absolutely everything. He's a defender's nightmare because he's got the physical presence. You can't bully him. His aerial ability, he's athletic, the pace, and he knows where to find the bat of net, Swarty. And he's actually probably, you know how much I love Harry Kane, Swarty. You know that. And look what he's gone and done in the Bundesliga. He's shown his class all around. But I think this guy, Haaland, is just, he is epitomises everything. Didier Drogba was the guy that changed English football, I believe, for that. We never played with two up front anymore when a lot of teams started saying that you could play with one number nine. Didier Drogba was the guy that changed the dynamics of football because he was so good at everything. And Haaland, for me, is better because of what he's doing with the goal scoring turnover in the ratio. And he's in the best possible place. The team that are going to create him, what, 20 plus chances per game, you're going to get on the end of some of them. And like I say, when people are saying, are City better or worse without Matt? When you are scoring goals like that, I don't care whether the team is good or not. He is just a world class and obviously the best Premier League striker that we have seen because he's breaking records at will. And yeah, will he go on to break more records? Of course he will if he stays in the league long enough and he doesn't go to Real Madrid or somewhere. But I adore him. I love watching him. And like I say, Swarty, I always remember teaching him everything I know from the players' lounge when he was there with his dad, Alfie. He should just hit the ball against the wall and say, there you go, Erling. Just keep doing this, son. One day you might wear the Leeds United shirt. There you go.
See, in the players' lounge, all I'm thinking about is for you teaching Erling how to drink and how to eat. Probably like a world-class player. That's what I would have thought. Julian, are you surprised first and foremost of how easily he's adopted or adapted to the Premier League? I mean, we saw him at Salzburg, Red Bull Salzburg. He tore the league up. We saw him at Dortmund, which was impressive how important and how many goals he scored. But now he's at one of the, if not the most difficult leagues on the planet, and he's making it look easy at times.
Yeah, incredible. That capacity, that ability to adapt, you're right, to different football, to different styles of play, to different coaches, of course, because we know that with Pep Guardiola, it usually takes a bit of time for you to get used to the style of football and the movement, everything. But to hit the ground running so quickly like he did was just incredible. Last season, we were all amazed. But there was also part of us saying, like, okay, can he do it again? And in which way? And he already has 14 league goals, I think. Yeah. Like you said, 15-48. Andy Cole had the record before of 15-65. So not just he beat the record, he just destroyed the record, really. And I looked up at the stats. So he scored those 15-170 shots. In those 170 shots, only 10 came outside of the box. So clearly, like what, for what Ruggie was saying, in a team like that, it's obviously easier because the ball is going to come a lot in that box and he makes the right runs. He's good in the air. He has an incredible eye for goal and that sense of goal of where to be at what time. But he's so clinical. And then the confidence goes with it, of course. So incredible. I don't know how long he's going to stay with us in the Premier League and how long he's going to stay at City. Or if at some point he would want to go somewhere else and maybe to Spain, for example, or to Italy, whatever. But for now, I think we need to enjoy him because it's an absolute pleasure to watch.
Do you know what it was in Swartzy? I was having a chat with I bumped into Alfie at one of the Leeds games recently and I had a chat with him. I just obviously were talking about Erling, having a good laugh about the players' lounge and growing up. I was asking him about that, what you said when he went from, you know, Salzburg to Dortmund into Man City. And his dad was just saying, like, the way that they wanted to make sure he was going to go to clubs that were going to suit his style of play. And they said it was obviously going to Man City, you couldn't turn that opportunity down because they're under Pep Guardiola. But going to Dortmund, he knew what they were about, the style of play, and they knew it would suit him. So I think that's massive kudos to obviously his dad and the team that look after him to make sure that his development and the pathway were at the right time in his career, and when they were ready, that was only going to enhance him rather than just seeing the glitz and glamour and going for a big move where another manager might not play the style of football that you're looking for. So again, he's been very, very well educated in his pathway and his process to get where he is now.
Yeah, so just remind you, 50 goals in 48 appearances in the Premier League. He needs to up his game in the national team because he's only scored 27 goals in 29 appearances. So that's just not the ratio I'm expecting from Erling Haaland. Let's move on to Doku. Julian, you know him from France. He looks electric. He's brought something different. He's actually probably more of an old-style winger that we're kind of getting back. And he's fantastic to watch.
Yeah, that was an amazing performance. I think he started because Jack Grealish was obviously not available. I think for now, when Pep wants more control, maybe in the West City play and that kind of performance, maybe Grealish for that is a bit better. Doku is still, like you said, towards he give me the ball and I run at you. I run forward straight away. There's not, in terms of control and just, you know, the tempo of the game or the pace of the game, the rhythm, things like that, he's not there yet. He's not ready yet. However, if that's what you want, if you want him to go at Trent all the time, then you give him the ball. He had 19 touches in the Liverpool box on Saturday on his own, 19 touches. This is as many as the whole City team. So all the other players, Haaland, Alvarez, Foden, Bernardo, Rodri, all of them, you put them together, Doku has as many as all the others, which was clearly the game plan, was to feed him and to let him go at Matip, go at Trent, go at Van Dijk, go and make things happen. And obviously, we saw that sometimes in that end product, he's just not there yet, but he's still a very, very young player. But there was a chat in the UK here about, does Pep need to change him a little bit to make him like Pep ready, kind of a City ready? And I think he's already changed because he had 6 recoveries of the ball in the game on Saturday. Trust me, when I watched him at Rennes in France, he never really worked defensively. That's not what they asked him to do anyway. So he was about making differences with the ball, creating chances, scoring, etc. But he didn't really have to work defensively. Now he plays Liverpool and he recovers the ball 6 times. Only Rodri in the City team recovered the ball more than Jeremy Doku in the game on Saturday. So for me, Pep has changed him already. It made him aware more of what to do in possession, but also out of possession. And I thought that was a very mature and impressive performance for someone who's still so young and so new in the league.
And from a striker's point of view, I've got to say, Doku, when I've seen him in a City shirt, there's nothing more. Swartz, you said, he looks like the old school. He takes players on, he gets a byline. He's not scared to go inside or outside. I absolutely would be thriving if I was Haaland, knowing that that player is there. Now, I'm not going to take anything away from Grealish, but Jack Grealish irritates the hell out of me these days because all he ever seems to do is go back and give the ball back to the left back. And I know he's got the moments where this... I could imagine being a strike in the box. Wait, is he going to cross it? No, he's going to go back to the left back. Is he going to cross it? No, he's going to go into Rodri. This guy, he's going to create you chances. He's going to take defenders left and right. And you've got to be ready for the opportunity inside the box. And like you say, any player that gets me on the edge of my seat to watch or standing up, even when I'm just watching on the TV, this guy is the player and he's the real deal. And I'm chuffed a bit. So obviously with what Julian just said there with his defensive units and his work rate there, again, that is massive kudos to Pep Guardiola and the way that he's working for the team. And obviously Julian's done his homework there because that is a great one to throw into the mix just to show how effective he is with and without the ball.
I hope so, mate. He knows French football inside out. I mean, I'd hope he's done his homework. Seriously, Bridgie, come on.
Someone has to work here anyway. You know, someone has to do the work.
Yeah, not just turn up like you, Bridgie. Anyway, like the thing I want to say is, I want to add to that. I don't know, maybe it's just me. When I think of Doku right now, it reminds me of what Raheem Sterling was like when he first arrived at the club at Manchester City. And maybe that fine-tuning a little bit. And like you're saying, Julian, Doku's probably been refined a little bit more and a little bit quicker in terms of changing his game a little bit. But the end product is the one I probably, you know, Sterling used to do the same thing, inside, outside, take teams on, take players on and scare the living daylights out of them. And that's obviously what Doku does very, very well. Let's move on to, Bridgie, your favourite subject, Spurs. They've lost 3 games in a row now. I mean, is it crisis already?
Is it crisis already, Swartzy? It was a crisis against Chelsea when we played that high line against Chelsea. I respect what Andrew's going to do, you know what I mean? We've seen him over the years. We know exactly what he's about. And he's brought a belief to Tottenham Hotspur fans, to the players that are there. There's no doubt about it with the wins that he's done and the football he's brought. You know, Ange Ball and anybody that gets a song of Robbie Williams sung about them, you know they're doing good things. However, that game when there was the 2 red cards, the injury nightmare that you saw unfold, I was looking at it thinking, wow, the next few matches are going to be very, very tough. And then the next few matches now after the back of 3 defeats are going to be even tough because you've got Manchester City in there and you've got Newcastle United as well. So it's a big, big test for Ange Postecoglou. Will he go away from what he believes in? No, he will keep playing his football. I just feel that the player that has changed the whole dynamics of Tottenham under Ange has been Maddison. You talk about anybody else you want at Tottenham Hotspur, Maddison has been the key to the success for this team. When they play out with Ange Ball, his defence in the defensive units, and when they're in the attack, and his key passes and the stats that he's been shown for the assist that Maddison has been getting is just phenomenal. So he has been a huge, huge loss. And it was always going to be tough when you lose your 2 centre-halves. So this is a big challenge for Ange over the next coming weeks. Is it going to affect him? No, because the fans have seen what it's all about. The club have seen what he's all about. And I think when Ange has a full squad to pick from, then there's no problem whatsoever with the way Ange is playing.
The problem you've got is, you mentioned Maddison, obviously he's a huge loss, right? But I think the 2 centre-halves, Romero and Van de Ven, are equally, if not more of a loss because of that stability and the way that Ange wants to play. I mean, the list goes on. Basuma being out as well, being suspended was a big loss. Bentancur coming back, getting injured again. So that injury list keeps getting bigger and bigger. Julian, that's the problem, right? So Ange is so determined, and I spoke to him last week. He will not go offline. He will stick to his philosophy and his beliefs. Even with the lesser players, I mean, Hill played. Lo Celso, I think, started only his second game or something in 2 seasons for Spurs.
I forgot he was even there, Swartzy, to be fair. That's how much he's played.
Yeah, you're right. Of course, it's not helping when you think that you've started the season with 8 wins and 2 draws in 10 league matches, which was incredible, and now you've lost 3 in a row. You know, some tough games, I guess. this one against Villa, although Villa away from home were not very good this season. But they are a good team. Wolves away, where City lost to, for example, where you had the lead very early on, and then maybe you were too conservative and dropped deeper and deeper and spent too much time defending, maybe. And the Chelsea game, like Brigitte was saying, I was not happy with the high line at 9 against 11. I'm sorry. I know Ange has great belief and those principles are in place and I'm all for that. But at 9 against 11, there's a thin line between suicidal methods in a way and what you believe in, really. I mean, you know, this is true. The big test come now because, of course, Bridget said City away the next game, then West Ham at home, then Newcastle. That's going to be tough. And I don't know if do you keep Emerson Royal as centre back or do you bring back Eric Dier? What was that message that you sent to Dier by leaving him on the bench for the game against Villa? Was it a case of pace? I don't know. Yeah. Does that Kulusevski, Hill, Brennan Johnson, Son kind of work? I think the content of the game on Sunday was good. I mean, they expected goals is high. They had a lot of chances, but they were also caught offside a lot. That's what Aston Villa do. Their offside trap is very good, very efficient. So I still think there's still some positives in there, but three defeats in a row and we'll have to maybe make the right adjustment to go away at City because you don't want to go there and get a battering and have a 4 defeat in a row on the back of a battering.
I mean, it's a mental season when you think, Ange, was it 3 manager of the months he won back to back?
Yeah.
And they normally get the managerial curse come. They say if you win it, then managerial curse comes. Well, no, Ange proved that it didn't. But I'll tell you what, it's come back to haunt him because after winning 3 in a row, he could be looking at 6 defeats in a blooming month and a half if he goes on and not win against the teams that you've mentioned there, Julian. And like I say, I just think it was that Chelsea game. I just saw Ange's whole castle just start to crumble in that one game because of the major injuries. Forget about the yellow, the red cards. You're going to lose players for a few games. It's the injuries that are building up now. Whether that is to do, if you remember when Jurgen Klopp first took over from Liverpool many years ago, the first 10 weeks of his tenure was, I think they had 9 to 10 injuries in the first 2 or 3 weeks because of the intensity loads and training that went up through the roof. We know what Ange's training is like, Swarty, what he expects, what he demands. So whether that's got anything to do with it or whether this has just been a freak accident that the lads are just going down. So it remains to be seen how they go. But I'm hoping he can, it's a test for him. It's a test for the team. The fans have seen what's in there. And I'm hoping that he can get out of this and go on to have a good season. Not just for Tottenham, but for Ange because of what he's done.
If you're looking at those fixtures that are coming up, if he were to lose, say, 2 out of those next 3 fixtures, has he built up enough credit with everything? So points on the board, of course, I'm not bothered about or concerned about Spurs being dragged down any further, like as in relegation fight or anything like that. Let's not even go there. But in terms of the way he's changed football, the way he's changed the football and the feeling around the club, surely he's built up enough credit and we shouldn't be worried about his position at the club, right, Jules?
No, definitely not. And this is a process as well. Let's not forget that he's only been there 4 months, or let's say 5 months, by the time he arrived, the preseason and everything. So this is a new process. I think even for him, it's probably new to lose so many players through injuries and suspension, to have to almost reinvent the team every single time. You make a mistake. When you win, It's no problem. You can keep the same team like he did for most of those 10 games. It's when you start losing, when you start not having the key players like Bridgie was mentioning, not Maddison. So what do you do? I was, for example, very surprised against Wolves that he didn't put Lo Celso in for Maddison, keep the same formation, just put it's kind of similar players in terms of playmaking qualities. Instead, he put Højbjerg. So you had a midfield with Bissouma, Højbjerg and Saar, which is a strong, very solid defensive-minded midfield, but not in terms of creativity. And guess what? They lack creativity a lot in that game. And yes, they took the lead very early, but after that, it was more about defending that lead than trying to score another goal. And they got done and they lost 2-1. So it's normal. I think that he needs, that there will be times where he needs to work out things and think about things differently, I guess. But yeah, no, he's got enough credit. And again, this is a process. This is the beginning of what looks like a very exciting, positive process.
Jules, I've got to say that analogy, that analysis there with Maddison, in Lo Celso, mate, that's like comparing Belgian chocolate truffles in Maddison to like a Milky Bar with Celso. You get, mate. They're not on the same level.
But you see what I mean? I think in terms, he clearly overthought the fact that we go at Wolves. What should I do? I think maybe just dropping Lo Celso there and just asking him to create. He has that volume of play as well. I think was maybe a bit surprising.
There's not been a manager sacked in the Premier League so far this season. Why do you think that's the case, Bridgie?
Great question, Sporty. I think it's got something to do with the fact that last season, Nottingham Forest stuck by their man and managed to get the job done and got through it. And they saw the turmoil that went on at Leeds United when they went through four different managers and how that didn't have an impact in success there. So I think now what you're finding that a lot of teams are going to give the managers a bit more time and the benefit of the doubt to try and get the job done. I think O'Neill was at Bournemouth when he got the job done. They stuck by him. And then obviously he got done at the wrong time. Cooper was the man at Forest. So the teams that have showed a lot more faith in their managers seem to get the job done last season. So the only people or personnel that I can see. I'm very surprised that nobody has gone at this time because I think there was five at this point last season had gone or something like that. Three or four or five had gone. I can't believe it. The only ones that I can see that maybe if anybody was going to get the sack this season, and I know that the fans are not happy at all with what they are seeing, is obviously my mate Paul Heckingbottom at Sheffield United. Whereas there's other teams that I've seen. With Edwards getting the job done at Leicester, getting their first win in the Premier League history. I think that's massive for them. That showed that they've stuck by him. Everton with Dyche, obviously what's going on there with a 10-point deduction. He's shown that he can turn things around there and had a great season. So, you know, there's in Burnley, Vincent Kompany, that's another one that's in there. But I don't know. Jules, what's your take on Vincent Kompany and any of them down the bottom end? Because I'm only thinking that Heckingbottom for me would be the one realistically at this moment in time.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bridgie. I mean, with Kompany, he obviously brought them up. They had an amazing season in the Championship last season. So in terms of credit in the bank, I think he's got plenty, and you see what he wants to do, and the players are clearly with him in that dressing room. The one I think that was the closest to go was Iraola at Bournemouth because they didn't win the first 9 games of the season. Now these 3 wins in 4. So in a way, keeping him was the right thing to do for Bournemouth. But they're still 16th. And I think this is one that we need to keep an eye on, maybe. But yeah, it's strange. But even if you look at the other leagues in Europe, there actually hasn't been that many casualties in terms of managers. Even in Italy, not too many, when usually at this time of the season, they already have had 4 or 5. In France, the same. Even in Italy, we had a Villarreal, but that was a little bit different, I guess, maybe the context. So maybe it's something that this season, people just keep the faith a little bit longer, maybe, than they used to.
What about you, Swarty?
Interestingly, I'm gonna go with one of my old clubs that I would think there are potentially some eyebrows as being lifted. I don't know. Like, I'm just worried, but I'm worried about Chelsea, right? And I don't know if making a change is the right thing anyway, because I don't know if anybody can come in and sort that mess out at the moment in a quick fix. I think it's something that is a process that's going, like you've mentioned before, I think it's something that's going to have to take a sustained period of time to try and get this team to gel together. Because there's no doubt there are some talented players there, but that's not enough, is it? So Chelsea is one.
Are you suggesting that Chelsea could be in a relegation battle this season, Mark? Is that what you're trying to get at there?
No, I don't think they will be. I don't think they will be, but I think they'll do well to finish in the top half of the table. I honestly do. I just feel that. Look, I was at the game against Manchester City. Going forward, I mean, it was a great game. It was an unbelievably entertaining game. But obviously, you can pick it to pieces in terms of defensive errors and the way that they set up and everything else. But to go head-to-head with a club like Manchester City and the stability that they've had and the success they had, that's impressive. But then you go and lose your next game. You know, you get thumped at Newcastle, which is not a disgrace, but it's the way in which they lost the game. I think that's the worrying bit for me. And that moving forward, now Pochettino's come out and criticised the players as well publicly. That's never a good sign either.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, when I did hear that, I was thinking, ooh, it's the first time I think in his managerial career I've heard him come out and criticise. So that shows how much he's not interested in what's going on there with these players at the moment, or what they're not giving him back at the moment. So yeah, that could be a good shout, you know. But I'm going to stick with the thought that it could be Heckenbottom for the Premier League's first sacking. And I don't like saying that because obviously I grew up with him.
Well, next on is the Women's Super League, which was back in action again this weekend on Optus Sport. So here's Narelle and Ash from our Women's Football Wrap Show with the rundown.
Thanks, Schwarzer. Yeah, well, a couple of good performances from Aussies in the WSL, Ash, but all the talk this week has been on Tony Gustafsson, the Matildas coach, and whether or not he is going to jump ship to Sweden. He's apparently met with the Swedish FA, interested in the national men's team gig,
yep.
And it's apparent that he's got a second meeting.
Yeah, it is. It'll be interesting to see which way this one goes. Like, I don't know whether he's applied for the job or whether they've approached him. Either way, he's taken a first meeting, said he's still committed to the Matildas job, got a second meeting apparently coming up. I don't know, if you were him, would you be heading towards that job or would you stay with the Matildas?
Well, I feel like for him, the big one obviously was the Women's World Cup, and then next up is the Olympics, but his contract is until the Olympics anyway.
Yeah.
So he might just be getting his ducks in a row for afterwards.
Yeah.
And I guess that process would have to start now with the vacant job at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the vacant job's there, you can talk about it. Maybe he can plan for it to be after the Olympics. I've got no idea on the details of it, but, you know, Tony's previously kept saying that he's interested in doing the Matildas job whilst looking at other offers elsewhere. You know, he's a bit of a smooth talker. We said that before, and let's see how he, you know, talks his way maybe into a new job or staying committed to his current job.
Because the other side of that is he could be, if he wanted to stay, he could potentially try get a contract extension with Australia. So if he does go, when he does go, how big of a loss do you think he will be? What has he done in his tenure at the Matildas?
Yeah, I think he's done a pretty good job of rebuilding the squad and sort of bringing in some new players that we really needed to sort of refresh it and keep bringing talent through to keep putting pressure on our already good team. You know, you need more than just a fantastic sort of 14 players. You need a big pool of talent to choose from. And, you know, the start of his tenure was difficult while he was going through that process. Now he's sort of gotten a good team going and they're flying. So the next coach in, if he does leave, you know, he's got a team that's doing well in a country that's really interested in football at the moment and the Matildas' progress. So, you know, it would be interesting to see if he leaves, who gets it, you know, who the front runner is. I don't know if you have anyone in mind that you'd like to see.
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I mean, the one that comes to mind is Tom Samani, because I know he's apparently still in Australia dabbling here and there. But then I don't know if you want to go back to something you've already had. But I feel like you've got your ear to the ground on these things. Who would you like to see?
Oh, look, I'm a big fan of Tom Samani. He gave me my first caps as well. But, you know, Joe Montemuro,
yes.
Can we get him back here?
I forget about him, you know. He's so far away.
He's off drinking espresso, enjoying his life in Italy.
Well, Schwartzy, you usually get some good answers out of Tony. Surely you can get the goss for us.
I don't know what you guys are trying to say about me interviewing Tony Gustafsson. Getting info out of Tony, geez, that's a tough one. As we all know, we saw at the Women's World Cup, I think I had to ask him five or six times whether or not Sam Kerr was actually, had actually trained with the team. So no idea. I don't think I can go there with this one at the moment. I need to be in the right mental state and place to be able to ask him those questions. So let's just move right on now. News over the weekend is that Paddy Cusnorbo has lost his job at Troyes. Julian, we're not really surprised, are we?
No, we're not, Schwartzy, unfortunately for him. Two wins only this season in 15 games. They 17th in the table, so the in the first position in the bottom four that will go down. So relegation places, I think they won one in 13 in the last 13. The football was not good. For a team that came back straight, came down from Ligue 1, of course, from the top flight, where he had a torrid time last season, kept his place with the ambition, obviously, to go back up. It's just not good enough. So so I think the City Group has had enough at that time. And not that it's an emergency, because there's still plenty of games to be played in Ligue 2. However, the teams were clearly not going in the right direction. So they thought it's better to end it now.
La Liga this weekend was full of, I would say, little surprises, but Phil Kitromilidis, who isn't on the podcast this week, did leave us the voice note about Barcelona faltering at his beloved Rayo, even though I thought that was a bit of a surprise, but apparently not.
So if I'm being cheeky, I can actually say that a 1-1 draw away at Rayo is a brilliant result for Barca, because it's better than what they've managed the last 2 years, because they've lost on the previous two visits to Vallecas, and Rayo have actually become Barca's bogey team. 5 matches now, 5 games without beating Rayo. It's a tremendous run for Rayo, and really quite a strange one for Barca. It was a game in which Rayo were really, really superior in the first half, and Barca came back into it a little bit in the second half. But it's not the first time we've seen Barca completely outplayed in first halves of matches. There's an incredible statistic that they've picked up more points in the last 15 minutes of matches than any other team in Europe. So good, they've got the spirit to keep going and fighting and pick up points at the end. But they need to start games a lot better, because they were absolutely steamrolled by the mighty Rayo in the first half. And a point apiece, possibly a fair result, but it's another disappointing result for Barca.
So I actually didn't realise that Rayo had such a strong or such a really good form at home against Barcelona. And having seen the highlights from the game last night, not watching the whole game, I admit it. I mean, Rayo first half were outstanding, like Phil was saying, Jules.
Yeah, they were good. I mean, they're a lovely team to watch. The results are not always there. But if you look at the game against Real Madrid, they drew 0-0 at the Bernabeu as well. They just played Real Madrid, Girona, who are... they could go back top on Monday night. We record this on Monday morning. If they beat Athletic Club de Bilbao, and then Barca. So Real Madrid, Girona, Barca, the top three, top four with Atletico Madrid. So three tough games. And for them to draw up Real Madrid, to then came within, 10 minutes or so to beat Barcelona. And then in between, they lost to Girona. They took the lead, and then after that conceded 2 goals. It shows they're a good little team. They play well. They've got some really good players like Izzy. They move the ball well. They're also very aggressive. They're very strong defensively. So it was never going to be an easy game. However, we should also highlight the limits right now for this Barca team, the difficulties that they have. They're not playing well. They're not creating enough chances. They're not scoring enough. And it was, they snatched that draw towards the end, where I'm not even sure they deserved it, to be fair.
Are Barcelona in trouble, Bridgie? Is Xavi
in trouble? Oh, well, I don't think so, Swarty, because they're four points off top with Real Madrid, right? There's still a hell of a long season to go. And the players at Barca have got at their disposal. They could find themselves pulling themselves out of this no problem whatsoever. However, I feel like this Real Madrid team, especially when we're going to chat about them hopefully next, because one man that I get really excited about is Bellingham. Is it too early to say that they're out of the title race when they're that close behind? I don't know, mate. I would never write Barcelona off. I don't want to, because I think that there is a lot more to come from them this season. And like I say, it's just, I want to see that race between them top two on again, because it makes it so exciting. Atletico Madrid have got a big one coming up against Barca very soon as well, so that'll be an interesting one. I think if Atletico can get a win over Barcelona, then you might be asking me the same question a couple of weeks, Swarty. If they were 6 points away from Real Madrid this early on the season, I may say it is over, but not at this moment in time, no. But they're definitely in a bit of turmoil. But what I loved from this weekend is Phil's voice note, obviously talking about how good Rio are and how the result in the bogey team for Barcelona. I was following his Instagram story, and it was like seeing a kid in the Willy Wonka chocolate factory. He was just so animated and so excited. And that's him getting excited if his team drawn a game. So imagine what he'd be like if they actually won a game against Barcelona. I want to see him in all his glory on the podcast once again when we get that luxury over the next couple of seasons. So we'll see. But it was good to see him. And any team that can take Barca, like you say, play them at their own game, very impressive.
It literally was a game of two halves. Rayo absolutely dominating in the first half. Barcelona came back in the second half. Pedri missed two big chances. Torres, another big chance before Lewandowski made it 1-1. But if you have not seen Unai Lopez's goal, it was an absolute screamer from about 35 yards out with the outside of his foot as the ball kind of got half cleared. It was absolutely brilliant goal. Let's move on to Cadiz, my team, against Real Madrid. It's not quite going so well for Cadiz, but I didn't expect much. We just hope they stay in La Liga this season. We talked about Garnacho's goal earlier on. Rodri's goal, first goal for Real Madrid, was a pretty good goal, wasn't it, Jules?
It was amazing, yeah. And what I loved about Rodrigo, he was his game. He was issue, he scored two and assisted the one for Bellingham. But that, with Vinicius being injured probably until the end of January, beginning of February now, Rodrigo, who usually plays on the right-hand side, basically usually play where Vinicius doesn't play, this time he had the Vinicius position. And from him to be able to come inside from the left onto his right foot, like we saw on the two goals, really, the two goals that he scored, I think was great. And of course, as soon as Vinicius comes back, Vinicius is going to go to his favorite position and Rodrigo will have to be again on the right, a bit more central, all of that. But when Real Madrid needed him the most, he was there. He responded so well because, okay, it's only Cadiz. No offense to your team, Schwartzy, but Rodrigo was outstanding, really outstanding, unstoppable at times.
Bridgie, I'll set you up nicely for this. Jude Bellingham, 11 goals in 12 league games. I mean, that's up there with Haaland statistics, let's be honest. He's scored 14 goals in 15 games in all comps for Madrid. So he's actually done better than Cristiano Ronaldo did when he first joined Real Madrid. So is he better than Cristiano Ronaldo, Bridgie?
Listen, right. Jules has only been on this a couple of times, right? Jules, in Optusport, they have a thing because of the size of my nostrils, they call it nostril dormus, right? I come out with these big, big quotes, all right, every now and again. I claim that Newcastle United would make it in the Champions League. They'd finish top four in the Premier League. Swartzy laughed at me. We got in there, all right? Yeah. I came out with another few over the times that haven't gone to plan. But I did actually say at the start of the season, Jude Bellingham would be one of the best signings, if not the best signing in world football, all right? So that's why Swartzy's team is up for this. And Swartzy, mate, anybody that can outscore Ronaldo, like 14 goals in 15 games. Ronaldo had 13, and the great man, Di Stefano, had 13 after 15 games. Jude Bellingham is up there already with the names that have gone down in folklore history with La Liga and Real Madrid. So that just shows the impact. Now, Real Madrid signed this guy not to be a goal scorer. They've actually signed this guy as a midfielder, box to box, get the odd goal, makes assists, but it can break down play defensively as well. So I think what they've realised now, the money that they've paid, they're going, hang on a minute, we've actually got a goal scorer here that is winning games and getting very, very important goals for them as well, not only in the league, but in the Champions League as well. So, man, what a finding. And I stick by my comments early on in the start of the season for this podcast. He is the best signing that you will see this season. And I'm absolutely delighted that he's found a whole new niche to his game. He's scoring the goals. And what he's done, he's gone over there, he's embraced it. He's learned the language. He's getting himself settled in very, very nicely. And it's not easy to do because my friend for Leeds United, Jonathan Woodgate, who was one of the greatest defenders of all time, that was struck down by injuries. It didn't go according to plan with him with his red cards. He found it hard to settle in over there. David Beckham settled in well. And again, Michael Owen did quite well, but couldn't quite get a grip with it. So Jude Bellingham, what he is doing, mate, this is absolutely spectacular. And I'm chuffed a bit because he is a class act off the field as well. He's a very mature young man.
Jules, if you know Bridgie, right, this is like up there when he talks about Harry Kane. I mean, we haven't even gone with Harry Kane, right, and what he's doing in Germany. Can you imagine? Like, this will be another level altogether. I mean, it's just embarrassing sometimes. I have to apologise for Bridgie. But Jules, is he... I mean, can he continue this run? I mean, it's phenomenal what he's doing. He's changed from that, like Bridgie mentioned, that midfield, deeper holding midfield player, breaking up play to an advanced position, being at number 10 or number 9, and mostly because of injury, right? He's been forced to play in that position. I want to ask you, are you surprised at how well he's done in that position, and can he continue it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. I knew he would do well, but not that well, I won't lie. Not like Bridgie, I didn't see this one coming. When Carlo Ancelotti mentioned the diamond midfield and the fact that Jude would play as that 10, so the top of the diamond, in preseason, I was like, okay, yeah, I want to see this because we know he's good at everything. So if you said to him, listen, you don't have actually to defend as much as maybe you used to before at Dortmund, and you can focus on the last third of the pitch a bit more because you also know that behind you, Cruz is going to pass the ball or Valverde is going to pass the ball. So you can just focus on making those runs into the box, be intelligent like you always are. But if you told me that he would at times score those goals like a real number 9, like a Bridgie number 9, I would have said never. I can see the number 10 in him, for sure, but the number 9 in him, that kind of quality finish of being at the right place at the right time all the time, never. Yeah. So on that, he's really surprised me. Because the 10, you could see that in him, no doubt. But the 9 in him, I don't think like that. You know, some of the goals, I remember the Celta Vigo was, I was in Spain on holiday. For him to win the game at that, it was the 81st or 82nd minute. By just a, like a proper number 9 finish, it was just wow. Okay. And the guy is so intelligent that he grasps that role so quickly that I find it completely amazing.
Is it too soon to be talking about Ballon d'Or for the, like, I know Haaland's going to be up there for the Ballon d'Or next season. Bellingham's going to be in there. Mbappe, how's that? Is he still in contention, Jules, from your connections with PSG?
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, you're right. I think we're one of them three, maybe Vinicius as well. If when he comes back, he finishes the season strongly. And then a lot of it will be down to the Euros, of course. If Jude can shine with England, can take that England team all the way. And if England and Jude win it, that means that Kylian doesn't win it with France, for example. Haaland is not going to make it, which I think is to the detriment of him for the Ballon d'Or. But if Vinicius wins the Copa America with Brazil, that will play for him. But Jude, Haaland and Mbappe and Vinicius, I guess, right now are the four leading contenders for the next Ballon d'Or.
I can't believe Bridgie stayed quiet on that one. You've changed, Bridgie, because the fact is that how have you not mentioned Harry Kane? I mean, the scoring record that he's
had.
Here we go. Now you're backtracking. Harry Kane and how well he's doing. Euros coming out with England. Bayern Munich should win the league. It's going to be tight. Leverkusen have been amazing. Then also England at the Euros, right? So, Bridgie, why are you just smiling? Why are you not even saying anything?
Because I've got to...
It's all about Jude now.
I've got to play him. I've got to play Harry down because what it is, he's my trump card. He's the one that's coming out and he's going to be... of course Harry Kane's going to win it. And you know how much he loves... You know how much he loves Bridgie as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course he does. Who? A couple of hours time of recording. Girona's playing at home against Athletic Bilbao. If Girona win, they go back to the top of La Liga, and they'll be 2 points clear of Real Madrid, which would be phenomenal, and that would make them 6 points ahead of Barcelona. And we always refer back to Barcelona as like almost the benchmark. If you're that many points ahead of Barcelona, you're fine. The other game I want to go on to, just a brief mention, Real Sociedad beat Sevilla 2-1 yesterday. Two players were sent off for Seville, Jesus Navas. And who else? Who was the second?
Sergio Ramos, of course.
29th. Red card of his career. That is insane. I mean, I didn't pick up that many cards in my career. Bridgie certainly didn't. He didn't play enough games to pick up that many cards. That is crazy, right? Is he go down as the hardest, most, like, I don't know, reckless center half?
I think outside of Australia, when we've got our very own Kevin Muscat, Muskie got a lot of red cards in his time. Yeah. But Jules, you take it away with what Ramos is about.
Yeah, I think 29. I mean, Pep, of course, who used to play with him at Real Madrid and now still plays at Porto at the age of 41, I think. It's probably right up there with some of the toughest, but 29 red cards. I know it's a long career for Sergio Ramos because he started as a 17-year-old for Sevilla or something.
But 29 red cards. I mean, wow.
Yeah, that's incredible. And just Schwartzy, very quickly, Villarreal won on Sunday against Osasuna 3-1. It was a hat-trick for José Luis Morales, El Comandante Morales, who's 36 years old. If you haven't seen the goals, one of them, especially his first touch, is just incredible. And then at 36, he runs the half of the pitch to go and finish 1-1 with the keeper. It's amazing. So I just wanted to say, well, Comandante Morales, what an amazing performance it was this weekend.
I've just been working out there with Ramos's red cards. Let's say he got three match suspensions for each of them red cards. It would be two or three games. He's probably been suspended, missed more matches than I actually played in my career. That's frightening, by the way.
Nearly. I was just short of 90 games, right?
So I'm close to that.
So you got three games. Three games. Mind you, it depends. If it wasn't Violet, it wouldn't be three games. It could be one. So, yeah, that's an extreme case. If every one of those 29 were for Violet...
I was just teeing you up to have a go at a Schwartzy. There you go.
Yeah, no, that was interesting, Bridgie. That's not bad from you, actually, for a change, because normally I'm teeing you up. Well, guys, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you very much, Bridgie and Jules, for joining us. A reminder that every game in the Premier League, La Liga and Women's Super League are all live and exclusive on Optus Sport. Thanks for your company on the Optus Sport Football Podcast. See you next time.
Hold up. Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.